Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm your host, David Wilk. Today I'm talking to Phil Olilla. He's the Chief Content Officer at the Ingram Book Company. Hi, Phil. How are you?
Hi, David. I'm great. How are you?
I'm pretty well. It is near the end of February, and I'm kind of looking forward to a change in the weather.
Well, so are we. We've had quite a winter down here in Tennessee, if you can believe it. Hey, thanks for having me on the show. It's exciting. It's an exciting time in the book industry, and we have a lot of things going on here at the Ingram Content Group. You refer to us as the Ingram Book Group, but we've recently rebranded the company as the Ingram Content Group.
Well, maybe you could actually just talk about that a little bit, because it was one of the questions I wanted to ask you anyway. For some people who may not be familiar with Ingram, we maybe want to describe how the company is set up at this particular time and how you are seeing, because I think you're positioning the company to face the change in the book industry that you are predict or foreseeing in the next few years.
Yeah, I think that's a good segue into that, is maybe to describe my title as the Chief Content Officer. So as the Chief Content Officer at Ingram, I'm responsible for all the businesses we have within the content group that have something to do with delivering products or services to publishers and helping publishers enter the distribution network for the book industry, which, as you know, is changing very, very quickly. So within that role, I run a traditional distribution company called Ingram Publisher Services, distribute books for 65 publishers, and we could do that physically, digitally, or through print-on-demand. I run the old-fashioned wholesale buying group, and what I mean by that is Ingram Book Group that you referred to earlier was traditionally known as a book wholesaler. And many of the products and services that we have today have grown out of the idea of book distribution as started by that book wholesaling company. I also run Lightning Source, our print-on-demand organization, and am in charge of digital products here at Ingram. So when you put all those things together, I'm essentially in charge of all the relationships and everything that we do as a business that has something to do with helping publishers distribute their content, whether it be in traditional printed form or digital form, to any of about 30,000 customers worldwide that Ingram has. What's exciting about that job is it's not necessarily today, as I think a lot of people know in the book industry, it's not necessarily about physical distribution. And while physical distribution is a component of book distribution, we've found ourselves in a position to deliver the printed book through our wholesale or distribution network, print on demand through Lightning Source, everywhere from Australia, coming in July to the United States, to France and the UK, and the US and France and the UK are all active today. And also the ability to deliver digital files through a product that we call CoreSource. And so, again, a long-winded answer, but the position of the Ingram Content Group in the industry today is to say, no matter the form of the book, whether it be printed or digital, or a digital file that turns into a print file on demand, we're in a position to help publishers push their content throughout all the new distribution networks.
Right. No, I think that's a really good description. But, of course, it's great because it gives me a chance to ask some questions, too. So, for example, the theory I think that a lot of people have talked about is that and I think this is kind of operative as an underlying philosophy behind what you're doing, that in that universe of content in any form, the theory would be that you would try to have a single document as a base, or a single base document for every publication. And that's really hard to do. And it sounds good, sort of philosophically, but on a practical basis, it's really hard. And I suspect that that's something that you guys have to wrestle with as you, try to apply the practical the practical part of doing this business, which is what you do every day.
Yeah, I think that's a great observation. So I think publishers today have to think about, and I'm actually, I have the benefit of never having been a publisher, so it's easy for me to comment on these things with perhaps a lack of experience that some publishers might have, and not essentially being worried about having an opinion and maybe not based on experience, which is also quite helpful some days. But publishers today, I think, are worried about workflow, and they're worried about file management. And one of the things to think about in workflow is, even as near as 5 years ago, I think publishers or people who prepare and create books in book form, I can remember a few years ago dealing with a publisher, and they were still dealing with film and collecting film from printers, and that's the way that business was run for decades. Your workflow would create a product. That product would be film-based. The film would go to a printer. The printer would hold the film, and I think a lot of times publishers were chasing their film all over the world to figure out what printer got it next. Today, the workflow is the same workflow, not necessarily the same software, but the same workflow that would have created that film. But what it does today is it creates a digital file. And from those digital files, the whole point is to create enough flexibility in those digital files where it can be converted into a digital file that's appropriate for ebook delivery, a digital file that's appropriate for short one print delivery, or a digital file that's appropriate for print on demand. What we're trying to do at Ingram, and what we've been able to do, is create a place where a publisher can deliver a digital file, and normally in one of three formats. The formats that would go through to a printer, the format that would go through to an ebook company, or perhaps just a generic format. We're able to store, and many people are able to store those digital formats in a single place. So part of the workflow management for publishers today is to say, even though I'm going to have to deal with several digital files, which are derivative of my original publishing workflow, where do I store them and how do I distribute it? And that's where the Ingram Content Group comes in, which is to help publishers manage those files as a completed form, whether it's digital form or a print form, and get them to those either those service providers or direct through to the consumer through the retailer as a digital book. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And of course, what it leads to is this question, and well, actually, there are many other questions, but one is, obviously, when you start talking about files, you're and in a world that's evolving and changing, you know, the standards for the files that go for that ebooks operate under are going to change over time. It's still a moving target, and this puts you as a company, I think it puts publishers as well, in a position of having to be much more technologically oriented than ever before. When you were talking about film, the publishers actually never made the film. The film was made by printers or by outsourced companies who were photo type shops or layout companies. And, you know, most publishers were not heavily involved in technology, whereas today I think every publisher, to one extent or another, is facing technology issues as a challenge because, you know, as you said, the file right now for short-run printing may be different than it certainly is a different file than you would use for an ebook. And maybe similar, but is not the same exact file that you would use for printing the longer runs that might end up in your warehouse.
Yeah. So there's a front end and a back end to all that file management, and I think you covered the front end really, really well. Which is, as a publisher, what software and what workflow do I use to make sure that I'm creating a digital file that can be used in all those formats? And then there's also the challenge of retailers. And as you know, and you and I have known each other for a long time, retailers come and retailers go. And some are in their ascendancy and some are in their descendancy for a variety of reasons. But every retailer, and we've got about 100 that we distribute to digitally, has their idiosyncrasies in terms of how they would accept a standard file.
That's right.
And so
standard in quotation marks.
Standard in quotation marks. So even though the publisher has delivered an EPUB file or an ebook file, I'm sorry about the phone, an ebook file to us, it may not be the one that's acceptable to Barnes & Noble, which may be slightly different than the one that's acceptable to Amazon, which might be not the same as the one that's acceptable to someone like BOD in the Netherlands. And so one of the places that we found ourselves is having to be in the position to manage all of those adjustments to files that are necessary to hit the distribution network. I think that's analogous to the role of a wholesaler or distributor in the print world, where one of the things that publishers relied on Ingram for was to understand what every retailer required in terms of the shipment and delivery of physical books. Those things were all different for many, many retailers, and Ingram had to adjust its business to fit each of those retailers so it could give a publisher an easier time reaching those retailers. The same thing is happening in the digital marketplace.
Right. Now, do you think, let's sort of think about the landscape, and again, maybe on the publisher side, the supply side first, a number of big publishers, each of whom is more or less capable of handling their own workflow, digital requirements, and distribution. Some do things differently than others, but the bigger ones typically can handle a lot of this themselves. Companies that are smaller will work with you. They might work with a Perseus with their Constellation program, or they might work with somebody else who is doing something similar to what you're doing. It seems like what will emerge is, as the technology becomes more challenging and complex, it's actually harder for small, even medium-sized publishers to insource that kind of work when they really want to be focusing on content and marketing and author relationships. And so is this a place where you see, and maybe I'm leading you too much with this question, but the idea is, you know, do you kind of envision that entities like Ingram and a couple of others like you will become really crucial pathways for many, many kinds of content producers? It might not be a book publisher, it could be almost anybody today can publish books, to, you know, you act as the pathway, but also provide all of the services that somebody who doesn't want to take those in-house will do, and then you act as the go-between to all of these varying retailers, as you just described. You know, Amazon is one thing today, could be something very different tomorrow. Apple can change the rules anytime they feel like it. It's easier for you to adjust on both sides than it is for the content owners themselves.
Well, I think I would answer yes to all of that. And I think, but the thing I would do now is maybe talk a little bit about where scale matters and where scale doesn't matter. And again, from our perspective at the Ingram Content Group, and in some way, our experiences with some publishers. So one of the things that we know has happened is, let's talk about digital delivery for a minute. Very easy, I think, relative to the size of their business and the resources that they have for a large publisher to connect to a large ebook retailer. And that's no secret. So, you know, a good example would be Random House and a direct ebook delivery connection to Amazon. But here's what's interesting about that. Very difficult from a potential revenue size versus a connection cost calculation for even the largest publishers to connect with all of the potential ebook sellers who might be out there. And the story I like to tell is, you know, we've worked with a couple major publishers, and they said, look, we've had an opportunity to connect on a business level with the top five ebook players. But after that, you go to the top five, you've already hit 60, 70, or 80% of the market. And then the question for those publishers isn't about whether they want to connect with the rest of the ebook delivery market from a consumer perspective. The challenge for them is there isn't quite enough revenue for them to get their IT department or their technical resources to commit to developing those direct connections. And so what we've found is this hybrid model for large publishers where they might have a direct relationship with some very large ebook retailers, but they would say to us, as a distributor, you already have these connections. We'll share some of the revenue with you if you can help us reach the rest of these ebook resellers. And so that's slightly different than what happened in the physical distribution market, where it wasn't quite as difficult to set up a business relationship with, say, an independent reseller or an independent bookseller, where it was really a function of getting them into the ordering workflow and making sure that they'd fill out a credit application. When you add the complexity of EDI exchanges and the expense of those kinds of exchanges to deliver e-files, the benefit of working with a low potential revenue retailer from a high fixed cost publisher quickly goes away. And so we found a place, I guess, to your point, in the middle, even to serve larger publishers. The as publisher revenue size goes down, the size of the potential resources that they might have to commit to working directly to an ebook reseller also reduces because of their size and their revenue. So even medium-sized publishers are turning over or asking us to be a service provider for a lot of their ebook connections.
Yeah, I would think that that's true. But of course, it's an interesting conundrum because I think you would have a very strong interest as this kind of seeing yourself as a, you know, maybe a highway where publishers can get on and they're able to get their books out to all of these other places along the road. Clearly, then, you know, the consistency of the highway interchanges and design would be in your best interest. In thinking about that in practical terms, you know, that the standards would really be standards. Is it possible, do you think, for anyone to influence the marketplace in that way? It seems like every time there's a standard, somebody raises their hand and says, well, I that's a great standard, but I need to change it a little bit to suit my needs.
Yeah, and I think the way we would think about that is we want the ebook delivery market, or let me say it a different way. We want the digital distribution of book files to evolve and change. And whether that's a print-on-demand file or an ebook file or any other file that you might imagine for something that's in book form, we've done, I think, a pretty good job internally within our own strategies trying to make sure that we don't position ourselves as a content development company. We're not out there developing content. We don't have relationships with authors. We don't have relationships with editors. We're not trying to get agents to deliver content to us. We're not interested in developing content. And we're also not a retailer. So we're not a consumer company. We're not a B2C company. So we're not interested in, even though we have interest in consumer relationships, it would only be through our resellers, who are the best at understanding their customers and their needs. We find ourselves in the middle, and I think a highway is a very, very good way to describe that. And so our responsibility is to stay abreast of the technological changes that publishers require in order to go out and acquire content and create a digital format for delivery, either in POD and physical or digital, and also to understand how retailers are changing how they deliver that content to consumers. If there was nobody in the middle, if there was no highway, as I think a really good way for you to describe that, there would be all kinds of different paths. So while scale is no longer a requirement for being a content developer, as it might have been 20 years ago, to get it into the distribution market, and anyone with a good, strong Google relationship and knowledge of Google can actually become a retailer, we find ourselves in the middle with a requirement to have a fairly robust technical infrastructure that can adapt to the requirements of retailers and the requirements of publishers. And so the more often those things change, the stronger our position becomes because change, as you know, is expensive.
Right. Now, that's what I was thinking about. There is a conundrum there. Change is good for you because it creates challenges which you can help overcome. But on the other hand, we need a certain amount of consistency over time that would be to your benefit as well, or everybody's benefit. The change does create friction, and friction is good for anybody who has solutions to problems.
Yeah, so the more friction in the distribution market, the happier we are.
Right. Now, but let me ask you, I want to go back to something you said, because I think this is sort of an interesting point, that you don't want to do business with authors and agents, and I totally understand that. You need to honor the relationships that you have and not undermine it, your clients on the one side or your retailers on the other side. But what do you do when, as seems to be happening, an author can say, I'm going to be a publisher, which,
yeah,
you know, that's going to happen more and more. And you're not the one who is saying that. I mean, you're not saying to the author, I want you to be a publisher, here, let me sign you up. But they're going to come to you and say, as I know many of them have done over the years in terms of print distribution, it isn't necessarily that the big name authors have become print book publishers, but many there have been, you know, self and small publishers doing this for years and years and years. It's nothing new.
Right.
And they may come to you as a publisher. You know, it may be the author has taken on the role of publisher, and you have certain requirements to enable them to either become a wholesale supplier or a distribution client. But in the digital world, where because so many, let's say, there are so many challenges for so many publishers, leaving many books and many authors in a position of creating their own mechanisms, I think inevitably you're going to be faced with many of them approaching you.
Yeah, well, I think that's a great question. So in some ways, we already are being approached by folks who may, you know, 10 years ago, they would have characterized themselves as an author trying to bring content to a publisher to get it into a distribution network. And I think today we're often faced, or what appeals to us, to a content developer is the idea that they can be a publisher with very low barriers to entry.
Correct.
So at no time, and I think this is where you're headed, at no time in the, I guess, the book industry or whatever environment you want to call the business that we're in, has it been so easy to be a publisher. And what I'd like to do is draw the distinction between, and say that Ingram is not a content developer. So, and I think I said that earlier, we're not a content development company. What we are is a distribution company. And so if someone can come to us and say, I'm in a position to solve all the problems that a publisher would traditionally solve, and that might be rights or editorial or royalties or developing a publishing program or getting the content together or repackaging the content. So as long as someone can solve all of those problems and deliver to us something that would have been delivered traditionally by a publisher to a distribution company,
right,
I think that's the definition of publisher. And that could be a one-book company, or it could be someone who's very, very large. And I think that's a challenge for large publishers, is to figure out how do I compete as a content development company with other content developers when the barriers to entry are very, very low.
Right. I think that's true. I think that's not your issue per se, but I think it's clearly an issue for publishers. And it has ramifications for you, obviously, although I don't think a publisher would say, I don't think it's likely that a publisher would literally blame Ingram, let's say, for providing tools that another publisher entity could use, but they are now going to be in competition with entities that might formerly have been clients of theirs.
You know, it's interesting. We just did this. Laura Baldwin, who's the chief operating officer at O'Reilly Media, which is a pretty large, or probably the largest independent computer book and basically technology publishing company in the world. We're their distributor. But what was really fascinating about a conversation we've had over about the last 18 months of leading up to this TOC announcement and presentation was the idea that they had millions of dollars in inventory. And they no longer saw their inventory as an asset, but they saw the millions of dollars tied up in inventory as capital that they couldn't apply to content development. And so what we worked with O'Reilly on, and I'll give you a specific example, was a way to convert all of that inventory into a inventory management program that would permit them to use print on demand to have a higher service level than their physical inventory investment was permitting them to have. And so by taking steps out of the supply chain and going to a POD environment, we were able to help a relatively large publisher free up millions of dollars in capital so they could pursue more content. Because I think strategically what O'Reilly said, and I'm sure Laura Baldwin would agree, is, look, the competitive advantage is no longer in having inventory. The competitive advantage is having availability, and that availability can't cost too much. And the reason it can't cost too much is because if I'm spending my money on inventory, that money is probably better spent on content development and creation.
No, I think this is a really interesting point, actually, because in a way this is driven by the growth of digital. Digital having no inventory cost and pure content development kind of as a cost structure, highlights and kind of leads you to start thinking in this way, where inventory plus inventory, the mass distribution of inventory it may not be coming to an end completely, but for many, 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 many books, it's no longer a practical consideration, and it's not even necessary. Now, of course, this gets to something that you can talk about probably more than anybody else can, and that is the cost structure of digital printing.
I think that's a good question. So one of the things I think the publishing industry grew up on was there was a famous operations research guy back in the 50s. His name was W. Edwards Deming. And now I've probably lost half the people to boredom on the podcast. But Deming said, and really smart guy, and he was the founder of the Toyota production system way back before there was a Toyota production system in Japan. So he was a
just-in-time inventory.
That's right, post-war statistician who went to Japan and helped them redevelop their industrial base. And one of the things that he said was, in order to optimize the whole, you have to sub-optimize the parts. And when we think about the publishing industry and the way that publishing companies were traditionally organized, it was about optimizing the parts. So optimizing your print cost, optimizing your freight expense, optimizing your relationship with a retailer, optimizing how you're going to deliver your stuff from one place to another. And different departments in those publishing companies were set up to do all of those things. So one of the things that's happened culturally within the publishing industry is, how do we take these organizations, and this is especially true of larger publishers, that were dedicated to optimizing their freight, optimizing their print, optimizing their editorial process, and what digital file delivery has done, whether it goes to POD or ebooks, has removed the potential for about, or potentially removed, about 50% of the steps in the old supply chain. And the challenge that we have today with convincing people that digital and POD are a good way to go is that the cost of a digitally printed book is slightly higher than the cost of an offset book. But by eliminating a freight step and eliminating inventory costs and eliminating a couple delivery options, you've actually reduced the overall cost of serving the supply chain. So while you have half as many steps, and those half as many steps might be slightly more expensive on an individual basis, by eliminating 50% of the total steps, publishers are actually freeing up a lot of capital that they can use for content development and creation.
Yeah, and you've actually proven, and I didn't mean to be an advertisement for Ingram or Lightning Source, but in a couple of cases recently, you have, when a book had been underprinted by the publisher and they needed books in a hurry, you were able, through Lightning Source, to print really almost gargantuan quantities of books very quickly, even though the price might, I know the offset price of books is still going to be less than a digital for a long run, but the speed is also an advantage, that you're able to deploy books so quickly when they're needed and where they're needed that, in fact, you kind of undermine the entire concept of inventory management that people have grown up with in the book business.
Yeah, great. I just grabbed a book off my bookshelf. A great current example of that is this book called The Road to Serfdom. So again, thinking about ways to make the podcast the least inspiring. but the University of Chicago published this book called The Road to Serfdom. Copyright on this thing was, it was copyright 1944 by a guy named F.A. Hayek. And what happened was, over, I believe it was Memorial Day weekend, Glenn Beck talked about The Road to Serfdom on his show on a Friday, or maybe a Thursday, probably a Thursday. And we were cleaned out, and everyone was cleaned out of the book. On the Friday, the University of Chicago had the digital file for this book, The Road to Serfdom, and over the weekend, we printed 35,000 copies digitally, print on demand, for both direct-to-consumer distribution through the likes of Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and all the .com retailers, and also direct into the supply chain for the major retailers. Even 3 or 4 years ago, it would have taken 6 weeks to catch up with demand. And at that point, frankly, the allure of The Road of Serfdom and Glenn Beck's endorsement of the book probably wouldn't have been strong enough to support 35,000 copies.
That's right. No, that's an opportunity that would never have been able to have been taken advantage of before or in any other way. And of course, interestingly, I know that there will be returns. You still, you're not getting rid of the returns issue just by being able to produce books on demand. But the theory, I would imagine, is that you're able to get them out in a more rational way as well.
Well, one, out in a more rational way, and the other thing is the supply chain is so different now with .com retail. So a large percentage of those books went direct to consumer rather than to retail shelves. And the reason they went direct to consumer is because after hearing the Glenn Beck endorsement, they basically just, turned to their laptop or their
right.
or their tablet and ordered the book from a .com retailer.
Right, which of course I'm sure many retailers are cringing to hear when they hear that, because it is an advantage that the .com has over a bricks and mortar retailer that there's nothing the bricks and mortar retailer can do about it other than to have a really powerful website, which is
right.
Difficult to do if you're a little guy.
Other than become a .com retailer,
right?
And that's just, part of the nature of the industry. So the consumer expectation today is always available all the time versus the consumer expectation, again, less than a decade ago, which was, the superstore may have it, and if they don't have it, I'll be in a position to special order it.
Right, and I think that also goes to the, interesting advantage that a lot of digital platforms have. That you can, Amazon pioneered this, but I think everyone else will do it, is, sampling with the instant ability to buy the book. That's pretty compelling for a lot of people. I don't think it's everybody in the world will buy books that way. A lot of people still like the idea of touch and feel. But from your perspective, I know we don't have an unlimited amount of time, but from your perspective, and I think you have a great position to really see the future as best as anyone can. There's been a lot of talk about how much of the business will go to pure digital, how much will still be printing, how do the two things interact? And actually, we've kind of touched on that. One of the issues for a publisher is if more of the books are sold digitally and your print runs go down, then your economics change, and it actually pushes you as a publisher more into a digital print-on-demand model rather than a longer-run offset model for printing books. But, and I know no one can really predict what the numbers will be, but, do you feel like, just sort of the feel from where you are, do you think that we're headed toward, 50-50 digital to e, or, digital to print, or even more? In the foreseeable, and I'm talking about the next 3 or 4 years, not 20 years from now, which I don't think anybody can imagine.
Well, you saw that. I think you were at one of the last two conferences, either Digital Book World or Tools of Change, where there was a panel, and someone on the panel said, we did a survey of a lot of publishers, and they said in 5 years, 50% of books will be published as e-books or sold as e-books.
Right. I did hear that.
And then the second portion of that survey was, however, at my publishing company, I only expect that number to be 20%. And I think what it says is, or I think one interpretation of that might be, is that the book form in itself is a sustainable format. The traditional printed book form is a sustainable format. Some formats will be more successful in traditional book formats than others. So a good example of that is illustrated books or coffee table books or art books or hardcover books. Some of those things are going to stick around. And then there are other formats, like the mass market format, I think we would all agree, is probably the one that is the most at risk. But an interesting thing happened along the way to digital conversion, which is mass market publishers said, hey, I think the market is going digital. However, there's still demand for the print form. So where they may have brought the book out in a mass market format years ago and only sold it through mass merchant retailers, they're reaching those customers who might have shopped at a mass merchant retailer in the mass market form, like Target or Walmart or whomever, and they're delivering those books as e-books. At the same time, they set those books up as POD files at Lightning Source, and they're selling them as trade paper. And so I just think that's interesting in terms of the the consumer is starting to define how book form is distributed. So I don't know if it's going to be 50% or 20%. My gut is it's going to be different by format. It's going to be different by use case. There was a – did you see the Chronicle book, the book that Chronicle just published called – I think it's called Press Here?
No.
It's a really fabulous children's book. And the whole idea is it basically, in a children's book, through the use of dots, it replicates an iPod app.
Oh, that's great.
So it's pretty funny. It's like the inverse of a digital application for a book.
Right, right.
So, you know, it's just an example of the book form is sustainable, whether it'll be 50% or not. My gut is that more things in book form will be sold. And so they'll, because of availability and because of the ubiquity of distribution, that people will buy more things in long format or long form book, whether it be the long format book, whether it be digitally or physically. I think the net number of book units sold, whether they be when you add book digital form onto physical form, will be greater than it's ever been.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're thinking about it that way is interesting. I also have heard some anecdotes from publishers where the idea is many digital, many books may be published digitally and in print form, and the two things can actually coexist and expand the universe, just as you're suggesting. And I think there are examples of that around enough to think, you know, maybe it isn't a linear thing in terms of predicting how things are going to work. Although I think also economics will apply, and I'm certainly thinking a lot about energy cost.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's got to have an effect. And, you know, if, of course, the other issue is digital requires electricity. If we have a challenge in getting enough electricity for people, for any reason, whatever the reason may be, that kind of alters the equation significantly.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, one thing, maybe I lost my train of thought. I was going to say one thing I do believe is that the distribution of books will continue, and whether they physical distribution or print distribution. In the long run, I think the publishers who are successful, and I think Dominique Rocca said this pretty well last week at Tools of Change, the publishers who are successful will have the flexibility to move between print and digital. And they won't necessarily be developing a digital book or a print book. They'll be developing something in book form that can be distributed with a variety of methods.
Right, and as you said before, I think the customer is going to determine. So the smart publisher is the one who can do what you just described and be listening to the customer to find out what the customer needs.
Yep.
Because clearly the environment has moved to one where customers rule, and publishers and everyone else who's involved have to be paying attention to what customers want and giving them what they want, when they want it, how they want it, which, you know, is basically what you've been describing.
Yeah, and you and I both know that what they want is whatever they want, but they want it now.
Want it now. That's right.
Immediately.
Right, no impediments. Well, listen, this is, I know you have to go, and I really appreciate your giving me this much time for a conversation. I really appreciate it. Thanks, Phil.
Hey, David, always good to talk to you.
You as well. This has been Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I've been talking to Phil O'Willa, the Chief Content Officer of the Ingram Content Group. Thanks so much.
Thank you.